Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Brian London. He is the editor of the Gold Newsletter, also our host down at the New Orleans Investment Conference. I will be posting a link below this interview for the New Orleans Investment Conference if anybody is interested in either going to New Orleans or doing the online. It's a bit of a hybrid model again this year. Now, Brian, let's talk about the commodity sector broadly, because we have a huge divergence right now where it's commodities, especially base metals, food, a wide range of commodities, energy, they are running higher. They are showing that maybe the economy is restarting, that inflation is here. But when we look at precious metals, they are lagging. Still, very much. Silver is sideways, gold has rebounded, but still has not taken out that downtrend. Overall, this environment, again, has commodities doing well and some of the larger companies doing well, but juniors are really left behind in this environment. Is this simply because for a junior bull market when it comes to commodity stocks, we simply need the precious metals running higher?
Yeah, absolutely. And with the important caveats that, you know, a big discovery is always going to get noticed and will rise. A big discovery will create sometimes an area play, et cetera. But the junior equities, the junior mining stock market is a retail investor oriented sector. And to get those retail investors excited, you really do need an underlying ongoing gold bull market. Gold brings in a silver bull market. So you get the gold stocks, the junior gold's moving, then everybody flows into those, you know, rushes into those silver juniors, as we saw last year. And then they start looking for other opportunities. You know, gold gets them into the room, and then they look around the room and say, wow, rare earths seems like an interesting concept. Battery metals, I love that story. Uranium's really undervalued. It's destined to go up. You know, all of this sort of thing. For the juniors, for the exploration companies, that's what you need to get people excited, to get those retail investors excited. You need an underlying gold bull market. There have been rare exceptions, but short-lived, usually, exceptions over the decades. But generally, that's what you need. And frankly, we haven't had that for about, 8 or 9 months now in gold. So these junior exploration companies across all the sectors are still doing fine because they have raised money. They still are able to raise money, not perhaps as at the price levels they want to, or as advantageously as they were before, but they're not, you know, sucking wind and running out of money, and they're doing work. So it is kind of a holding pattern right now for the sector until we get the gold price moving and get that excitement back.
Yeah, it's something that you and I were chatting about off mic, is the fact that there is still a lot of cashed up juniors doing a lot of work here. So there are potential catalysts on tap, but we're not seeing that same sort of maybe euphoria heading into some of these drill programs of the summer just quite yet. Why don't you think, though, that investors, I understand big investors, they can't really invest in the juniors, but why don't you think retail sees the fact that copper is running and goes down to some of the copper juniors and says, this is cashed up, this should be, and I hate to use that term, but re-rated higher?
They do on occasion, but let's face it, the junior mining sector is built on romance, isn't it? I mean, it's a story driven market, and in what's exciting about it is the thrill of discovery and having a big hit, you know, and having a drill hole hit and your stock goes up 10 times in relatively short time. That's the excitement that drives those retail investors. And it's not to their benefit. They really should be looking at a lot of these stocks and taking the more mundane doubles or triples over, you know, a year or two. And a lot do, but to get that real ebullient atmosphere, that energy in the junior mining stocks, you need to have the gold price not just high, but trending higher and consistently higher. And it doesn't have to be a rocket ship move, and frankly, it shouldn't be, because you want these things to last. You know that the bull market of the 2000s was slow to get started. We had a double bottom in 1999 and 2000. The first couple of years, weren't really that exciting. But once it got moving, we had, with some notable punctuations and interruptions, 2008 being one, but we had about 10 years of a fairly steady rise in the gold market. And fortunes were made because that overall trend was still heading higher. You could buy these juniors, you could have a stock go up two or three times, then you move that into another stock that might go up four or five times. Somewhere along the way, you might have a 10 bagger. And then you would say, oh, I'm going to speculate in that rare earth play, or look, that uranium play looks good. And you had all of these kinds of ancillary markets developing along with it. It was an extraordinary period. And the kind of environment where real life-altering gains could be made. And I think, frankly, with the backdrop of the setup we have now, on a fundamental basis, with this kind of money and debt creation going on, just willy-nilly and with wild abandon, I think we're entering that kind of market again. We just have to be patient.
Yeah, the way money flows throughout the juniors, as you just outlined there, is exactly spot on, right? You see a bit of a bull market in gold, gold juniors start to make money, and then all of a sudden, all these people that made money in the gold juniors are saying, ooh, look at these other sectors and these juniors, and maybe I should rotate some money into there. Problem is, we're just not seeing the juniors in the other markets right now run higher to rotate money into gold. I realize some are, but broadly, it just isn't quite that whole rising tide lifting all boats. How much does this also come down to M&A activity too, Brian? Because relatively, M&A activity has been slow, and that is a liquidity event that guarantees money to move into other stocks.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And that's a great point, because when you have a takeout of a junior, then capital gets released into a market or to investors who are already in that market. So, you know, they're not going to take their windfall winnings from a junior that they bought for 10, 15, 20 cents that got taken out for $2, $3. They're not going to take those windfall gains and put them into, the S&P. They're going to go looking for these other juniors that can give them that kind of a charge again, those potential gains again. So they plow it back into the sector, and that lifts the whole sector. We really haven't had those kinds of big takeouts. The majority of the M&A activity we've seen have been from almost, you know, mergers in everything but name, from, you know, mid-tier or even producers or development companies of a lower level snapping up each other. You know that the Fortuna and Roxgold deal is a prime example of that, where you're just not getting a big major coming in and paying an 80 to 100% premium for a junior. Instead, you're getting a 30 to 40% gain on what's essentially a merger of virtual equals.
Well, and especially when it's an all-share deal and the shares fall right after, and that premium is almost immediately evaporated, right? That's the market telling us they're a bit skeptical about that deal.
Well, yeah, and that deal in particular, from a lot of standpoints, doesn't make sense because it's really apples and oranges. But that might, you know, obviously that's the point that they were doing it. They're both trying to diversify a bit. But, you know, there's some doubt now whether that deal is going to happen. But that's the kind of deals that we're getting right now. We're not getting those slam dunk, easy, damn straight, I'll take it kind of M&A deals yet. I think it's coming because the majors and the mid caps, the mid tier producers are making money hand over fist. And as we know, at some point, those big producers, they have all that money jingling in their pockets, and they start to go a little crazy. And we want that, you know. We don't want them to be prudent guardians of shareholder capital. We want them to get a little crazy and buy up our juniors that we own. Eventually, it's going to happen.
I agree with you. Eventually, it will happen. Fact of the matter is, we're just kind of waiting for it to happen. But in the meantime, the mid-tiers are, and the majors, building up nice cash positions. Anybody with production right now should be making and saving some pretty good cash, because they're not spending it, again, on those acquisitions. Is that the sweet spot then, Brian? These mid-tiers in your eyes?
Yeah, it is. And I don't have any names to recommend to you because I don't really follow them, but I would agree with that. You know, our friend Rick Rule agrees with that as well. I think that's kind of the sweet spot right now. You have a little bit of being overlooked by the generalists, but still just making mint. And, you know, and these margins are just fine. Again, you know, unless gold is headed higher, you don't get those retail investors really excited at the bottom of the food chain. But from an institutional standpoint, they're starting to recognize those earnings. And these margins right now are perfectly fine, and they are going to continue to make lots of money. So that is a play, you know, the mid-tiers and the companies that should be the mid-tier targets at some point.
What are your thoughts about when you hear people analyzing stocks and saying, look, this stock needs to be re-rated. It's not getting the value that it should be. However, you look at the share price chart and it's more or less trending sideways. So that whole argument, it needs to be re-rated. Usually that needs to come on the back of some significant news to draw more investors in. Do you buy that whole re-rating argument as a reason to buy?
Only if there's a catalyst. And obviously, one of the easiest catalysts to look for is production. You know, if a company is trading at a market cap that's roughly equivalent to what, say, next year's annual free cash flow will be, that's a company that's due for a re-rating. But it's not just trying to convince the market it's due. It's going to get there because it's going to start putting out that cash, and cash can't be ignored. So those are the kinds of opportunities I think you can find. And not to just plug Gold Newsletter, but yes, to plug Gold Newsletter. I've got two of those opportunities in the May issue right now. Just really companies that are on the verge of some exceptional production and cash flow relative to where their current market caps are. And both are really good expiration plays as well.
All right. Hey, Brian, always great chatting with you, buddy. A bit of a tough day for gold. But again, gold's just in this trading range right now. At least it's not making new lows like it had been for the last about 7 months. But again, look to some of these other commodities. And boy, oh boy, we might be in this commodity super cycle. But again, less people pay attention if it's not the precious metals screaming higher. Brian, great chatting with you. We'll chat again in another couple weeks, and hopefully we'll be talking about a higher precious metals price and some more interest in the juniors.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Corey.